Every week, millions of researchers and educators open up ChatGPT, Bard, or Claude. But here is the twist. Most believe AI could transform their work, yet very few of them actually using it. Why the gap, and what does that mean for the future of research? Welcome to Dare to Disrupt, the podcast where we unpack biggest shift in education, technology, and AI, one conversation at a time. My name is Dari, and today we'll be deep diving into how AI is changing and not changing academic research. Joining me today is Dr. Tosin Ekundayo, co-author of Evaluating the Influence of Artificial Intelligence on Scholarly Research. A study focused on academics, Dr. Ekundayo's work explores not just the promise of AI in research, but also the ethical concerns, adoption, barriers, and the future of human-AI collaboration in academia. At a recent meeting with academics, someone asked two questions. Number one, who thinks AI will revolutionize research? Almost everyone raised their hands up. Then who is actually using AI in the research? Nearly everyone dropped their hands. And it's exactly what your study found. Huge optimism, but low adoption. Let's start there. Welcome, Dr. Ekundayo, and thank you for joining me today.
Thank you.
Your study revealed that there is a massive gap between AI adoption and the perception of AI amongst academics. Why do you think there is this gap, and how do you think, what are the strategies that you think we can use in closing these gaps?
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me, first of all. My name is Dr. Tosin Ekundayo. I'm a professor with Synergy University of Dubai, and I've been in academia for 10, 11 years now. And it has been an humbling experience. Now, to your question, the biggest problem is, what is AI? I think that answering that particular question determines or has a long way to show the implementation or the level of implementation of AI in academia. Sometimes the biggest, one of the mistakes most people make is they think AI is just one kind of machine that is actually here to replace what we do or to replace us. Some other people think AI is ChatGPT, but it's much more bigger than ChatGPT. In fact, every conversation, every circle where they mention AI, you hear always hear the word or the concept of ChatGPT in the game. But AI is much more than that. And the full word for AI, or from the acronym of AI, is called artificial intelligence. Before we even dive into the gap and why AI is what it is in the sector, what is AI? Now, the way I like to tell my students is artificial. Anything artificial is man-made. It could be a framework. It could be anything that is man-made. I am not man-made. I'm natural. So which means I have natural intelligence. Now, on the other end, what is intelligence? Intelligence simply means insight. And what is an insight? An insight makes you or helps us make better decisions. For example, if I'm cooking, if I have insight, that means I have intelligence, which means my cooking will go very well. Okay? So, as a natural human being, if you give me intelligence, it means you're giving me insight, which means that insight that you're giving me would help me do whatever I need to do properly. Now, if we say artificial intelligence, it means a particular framework, it's not natural, has been created by man. However, it has been created to give me intelligence, which means whatever intelligence it gives me, it's artificial by nature. That's why we call it artificial intelligence.
I really, really like that perspective, and I've never heard anyone breaking it down like that.
Thank you. Thank you. Because, see, I usually tell some of my colleagues, when you discuss with future generations or the younger generations, I cannot be up here and my students are down here and expect them to connect with me when I'm high here. They are not the individuals who I want to prove my PhD qualifications to. I'm supposed to break down knowledge for them to understand. So when I talk about AI or when I talk about any of the concept in class, I like to break it down in simple terms for them to understand. Okay, because this generation is completely different. So back to the concept of AI. The moment you begin to understand that AI is supposed to help us become better at what we do, then you can begin to ask yourself, why is there a gap between understanding it and implementing it? Now, the reason there's a gap in the industry boils down to the current understanding of AI within the academic sector. Now, everybody uses the word AI, AI, AI. But if you ask them, what is AI? There's so much misconception in the industry about what AI is. In fact, when during the research, when I was asking some of my colleagues, and like, how do you implement AI in academic research? Another misconception is, when you talk about research, research is just not one singular activity. Right. There are a couple of activities that I have to carry out before I can say I'm actually carrying out a research. For example, maybe I have to do a couple of review of literatures. Maybe I have to collect data. Maybe I have to analyze data. Maybe I have to insert a section called a theoretical framework, conceptual framework, or discussion. Now, you now begin to understand there are different aspects of the research or that I'm actually carrying out. The question now is, now that I understand what AI is as an insight, which aspect of it all am I actually applying the AI to? The insight that I'm getting from this artificial being, which aspect of my research am I actually applying it to? If you ask me, ChatGPT is good for maybe editing and writing, but that's not all there is to say about research. There's a whole lot of elements that needs to come together for research to actually take place. So if you, from my understanding from the research, is the gap exists because of the lack of proper understanding of what AI is. AI is not a machine that takes me over or that replaces me in my place of work. AI is as good as a calculator that helps me do whatever I do properly. Now, because we don't have the understanding, the gap will remain.
Wrong. Wow. So based on your response now, you're saying the understanding, it's actually the base that we need to clarify first before we then now say, how do we want to use it? Who is using it properly or not? Okay, that's a very good point. And, you know, I've never thought of it that way. And also, I realized that some of your findings is about data protection is a part of it, of course. But I really want to understand why that is actually on top of the list.
Thank you. Now, because the whole idea of IT, it's an emerging field, it's easy to misconstrue some of the concept we have in IT. And one of those concepts is data. And over time, you hear concepts like data management, data governance, and data this, data that. Some people actually think one concept replaces the other. No, they're actually supposed to coexist. Now, the reason why I went that route, or why I want us to understand what data is because data is the foundation of this whole idea of AI. Okay, another way you could look at AI is it's an algorithm that has been trained based on a particular data. Now, one concept that is happening in the academic industry as we speak is the concept of data transmission, which means whatever we used to do that used to be manual, just like every other industry in the world, we are trying to infuse as much technology as we can. So we are transferring or transmitting whatever we are doing into a digital format. For instance, there used to be a time where online education was actually not even referred to as good education. Exactly. Now it's an option on the table. And the degrees are recognized as much as the on-site education is concerned. Right. So one reason why one concept that stood out is the institutions actually do not have data governance policies in place. Now, what actually happens is maybe out of artificial enthusiasm, people tend to skip the other aspect of data management and just move to security. Data security is important. Now, one of the reasons why that particular aspect is very popular is because it's one of those things that is commonly being talked about. And it boils down from the concept of being hacked. I don't want to be hacked when somebody comes in and takes your data without you giving them authorization. Okay, which is fine. However, that's not where it ends. Okay, so this particular scenario gives recognition to data security, which it's fine. But there is more. Okay, there is more to that. For you to even talk about data security, there's something called data management. You have to look at that. For you to talk about data management, there's something called a data governance. Okay, now data security is just one tiny bit of that.
Right.
Now, if you don't pay attention to the overall context, you are just playing with just one angle of it, there will always be issues in the industry. Okay, in fact, now you hear people talk about data security, they talk about IT department, but when I go to some of these universities or these academic settings, I never hear about data management.
Right.
I never hear about data governance. And everybody's just talking about security.
I really like that perspective of things, but why do you think we should look more into
exactly
data management?
Yes, because there needs to win that. Just the same way that AI is misunderstood,
right,
data in itself is also misunderstood.
I mean, that's very interesting because I read one of the recent article that was released by BBC, by the way, has mentioned that some of the AI that has been out there do not even understand some accents, for example, even in the UK, like Brummie accents and Scouse accents, for example, because they are being trained by the Western English and
exactly
all of that. And if your data is not on the tool, then there's no way you'll be able to use it.
I agree.
Effectively. So this is a very, very valid point, and I think we need to look
talk about it.
Exactly.
See, let me point you in the right directions. There are two policies that institutions or academia has to start looking at. I understand it might require some changes, which might not be easy, but there are two policy angles that these people need to start looking at. Now, one is data governance. Data governance is not data management. They are close in meaning, but they are not the same. That's number one. Another concept is open data. Now, I'll give you a brief explanation of both. Now, before we even go into that, I will tell you what data management is. Data management is the movement of tools and systems so that you can achieve a particular goal, which is fine. I'm not against that. However, while you are doing all that, there are laws and regulations that should govern that movement. For example,
right,
you are moving my data. You're not going to move my data because you want to. You should move it within the framework of the law. That's where data governance comes in. So data governance is the law, the policies, the regulations that guides everything that the IT guys are actually doing.
Right.
So if you have data governance, somehow your security is intact.
Right.
Because it will help you protect the data that you have. That's on one hand. On the other end, there's need to for us to practice the concept of open data. Now, this is where huge conversations or deliberation needs to go in. On one end, we are talking about security and data governance.
Right.
Okay. On one end, we're asking you to be open. Now, it is the responsibility of the management to determine what should be open and what should be governed.
Right. So does that make GDPR a certified body to look into this? So, for example, let's say someone approached me and they are like... They've designed an AI tool and they've approached me saying that we would like you to look into this AI tool. It would be really very effective for yourself and to, you know, enhance your student experience and all of that. Do you think if I ask the right question in terms of how would you suggest that I approach data question when it comes to, you know, challenging those kind of tools, because there are so many of those tools out there and that we need to be sure where our data is sitting, and we need to know what's happening with the data. How are they being used? How are they being used to train those, you know,
the machines?
Exactly.
Thank you. Now you're talking about data governance. Now, if you have a data governance policy in place, it should monitor the movement, who has access, who takes what is training what. That's number one. Okay, what should be confidential, what should be open.
Right.
Now, if you implement data governance without open data, there will be a concept called AI bias. Okay, I'll tell you what that is. If you go on the internet and say Africa, you would probably see the desert and the lions and the zebras, and it shows you a very negative perspective about what Africa should look like.
Of course.
Okay, but you and I know that's not what Africa entirely looks like.
Absolutely.
There are modern or urban cities in Africa that not usually captured by the algorithm. Now.
And that's because that's what is being trained.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So now, if you are in academia, you need to start asking yourself, how much of my data is open? Should, in case there is a need for us to train a particular AI, you see, what kind of data will be used to train the data? Now, if you want to train your algorithm and you use a data that is biased, the outcome will be biased.
Exactly.
So this is where these two policies has to come into play. In the process of digital transformation in the academic sector, maybe by the university or any of the institute, there is need for these two policies to be in place. If these two policies are in place, the regulation will be there.
And the two policies are?
Data governance policies, okay, and open data policies.
Open data
now,
policies.
This does not mean you should throw away data management. You could have every other policies in place, but you must look for ways to bring these two in. One, because you want to protect what needs to be protected, okay? At the same time, you also want to open what needs to be open to avoid situations like AI bias. Otherwise, see, the AI is not natural, like I said. It's not like it gets something from heaven.
Right.
Whatever you, if you train the AI or the algorithm with the corrupt or biased data, it will give you biased outcome for sure.
It's garbage in, garbage out.
Garbage in, garbage out. So there is need for us to understand, okay, how much of this data, what kind of data do we want to put out there? Okay, so at least when we start training the algorithm, okay, it begins to give us what it needs, okay, or what the outcome that we expect. Now, see, I want us to understand we're moving, the concept of AI has gone beyond us training a particular algorithm. Now the algorithm can train itself, which means it's automated.
Absolutely.
Okay, let me give you an example. If I go to your Instagram page, I could say he likes blue. That's because of the side of you that you are exposing to me. You might actually like pink, but you're not showing me that side. So what you're doing is you are managing or governing your life. You're managing the amount of information you put out there. And you're showing me a persona that is completely different from the original you.
Which is the reality of social media, isn't it? Because people are just showing you what they want you to actually see.
Exactly.
They're actually showing you. I mean, that's what I'll do anyways. I don't want to show where I'm crying and all of that. I don't want to show it to people. And it's just so interesting to see that this is the same way AI is being trained as well, and,
yes,
and all of that. So, but when it comes to, when it comes to research itself, doing research, you've mentioned that there are a whole lot of, you know, activities encapsulated within research,
yep,
which is very understandable, and I understand that absolutely. But how would you recommend, you know, based on your research, what would you suggest that if an academic or a researcher wants to carry out a research using AI, what are the things that they need to understand first before going towards this direction?
Brilliant. Now, the first thing I want every academia or everybody in academic to understand that ChatGPT is not the only existing AI. There are more than, if I'm not mistaken, the last time I checked, it's about 3,700 different versions of that. People don't even understand that the same way you and I are having conversations, there's an AI that I can have a conversation like with like this.
Exactly.
Okay, sometimes I could have a research idea, and for me to validate that research idea, I need to sit down with a colleague. Well, if your colleague is not available, there could be an AI, or there is an AI that I know for sure that could have a conversation with me the same way I'm having a conversation with you.
To scrutinize.
Just to scrutinize. Yeah. It's like the embodiment of the entire internet, giving the internet a human form, instead of me to go and say, oh, AI, there's a part of research we call literature review, which means you just have to go on the internet and see or investigate the amount of knowledge that is existing. Now, it usually takes time, okay? What if there's an embodiment of the internet itself that I can say, can you please check the internet and find me a paper that talks about this, 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 and this? Now, this AI is able to tell me this particular concept or topic was discussed in 2000. This was discussed in 2002. This was discussed in 2003. Then I could possibly say, could you give me a summary of all these papers? You see how it is. Okay. Now, it's not writing the paper, but it's making my job as a researcher very easy. Do you know how long it would have taken me to look for each of these papers, read these papers, trying to integrate the arguments in this paper together?
So are you encouraging the use of AI?
I am encouraging the use of AI.
I like the bold statement.
Yes.
Because this is what people need to understand, that there's no reason to be shy about using it. Or like one of my, someone used to say that no AI shaming. You know, why do you need to shame the other person because they are using AI? It's here to stay. It's not going anywhere. We need to use it. But we need to understand how to use it properly, effectively and ethically, by the way.
This is the conversation we should be having.
Exactly.
The conversation we should be having is not whether we should use it or not.
Exactly.
The conversation should be, what is the right way to use it? What is the acceptable way to use it? How do I use this particular form of technology without invalidating the outcome of my research? That's the conversation we should be discussing. Now, as to how you would use it, well, I just gave you an option. One, you could use AI to search. That's one. Two, you could use data to analyze data if it works for you. Okay. You could use data to edit. You see, you could use data to draw a map of papers that has been written about a particular research over a period of time. Now, most researchers don't even understand there's a particular regulations for this already. It's called the COPE regulations, the COPE regulations. It's from the COPE regulations. Now, it requires, it is the Committee for Publication Ethics. Okay, if you truly want to know how much of AI is accepted in your work, well, read the COPE regulations. They're called the COPE regulations. Okay, and one of the tenets of that regulation is transparency. It's transparency. One of the tenets is, it says, whatever you use AI to do in your research, you, at the end of the paper, put a disclaimer.
You must state it out.
Okay, and say, I did this and did this with. Now, if you submit your paper for review in a journal, well, it is now at the desk of the journal to see if it is ethically sound or not. If it is ethically sound and acceptable, why not?
Right.
Then, if they have concerns or ethical concerns for it, then sometimes they would ask you to present your case. I have a student who wrote a paper recently, and at the end of the paper, she said, I have used the AI to edit this particular paper, and the paper was submitted to one of the journals. It's a Q1 Scopus a journal, okay? And the journals reached out and said, okay, fine, we understand you've used AI to edit this, okay? But can you please send us the original draft before the editing to prove that this is originally your work?
That is exactly where it comes to, you know, providing the right academic skills support for students or researchers, as this case may be. Because there are a whole lot of, resources out there that state how you can actually reference whatever you've taken from AI or whatever support you've gotten from AI. How can you cite it properly? And then how do you reference it? Even up to Harvard standard as well.
Of course.
So there are all of that available, and people need to get familiar with it, and students need to understand this is available for them to do. I really like that point.
There is needs for us to start having conversations. I've been to workshops and conferences where a particular professor, out of experience and whoever they are, they just say, no, it's not accepted. You don't have the capabilities to make that kind of law.
Exactly.
Okay, we are in an industry that has laws and regulations both internationally and locally.
Right.
Okay, if you have concerns, maybe you should take it up with the buddy.
Right.
Okay, so the conversations we should always be having is, what is accepted and what is not accepted?
Right.
What does the law permit and what does the law negate?
Right.
Okay, amongst professors, we need to have these conversations and then eventually come to a consensus. The moment we're able to come to a consensus, then we can bring the student along, okay? But when we are not even, when we have not even arrived at a consensus between ourselves as professors, then you find one professor telling the student, no, it's not accepted. Then you tell another professor, okay, it is accepted.
Right.
But the truth is, we have to be careful. I'm preparing my student for a future that I might not even be involved in, okay? I am 43. I have a few years to be in the industry. The future belongs to the younger generation. If I am not careful, I would be an obstacle to my student instead of an enabler. Okay?
Right.
Because the future belongs to them.
And that reminded me of one conference that I attended.
Mm-hmm.
And someone threw out the question and said, how do we control this AI thing? And our students are, you know, they're going everywhere. They're just doing whatever they like with it and all of that. And the response was around, you don't need to control it. It's their world. Just adjust to it.
Simple.
It's very, very simple. We need to adjust and be able to, you know.
Simple as that. Exactly. That's what I'm talking about. I had this experience with a colleague, and the students are copying the answers online. Okay. Then I took the questions. Then I was like, where did you get the question from? You got the questions online. Now, if it's okay for you to, as a professor, to get the questions online, why is it not okay for the student to get the answers online?
I really like that part.
You see, yeah. Okay? So you cannot accuse the student of something you're also guilty of. But when it comes to...
And that's where the transparency comes from.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay? So when it comes to dealing with the student, I expect or I encourage creativity from the sides of the professors. We must understand that education is not the same compared to when we went to school.
Exactly.
Okay. When I give my students assessment or assignments, I don't want to give you something that makes you lazy. I want to test your creativity. I want to bring out something in you.
The critical thinking.
Yeah, the critical thinking. That's the kind of things our questions should be like, or our assessment should be like. Now, if AI can help them respond, well, again, that's where the conversation comes in. What is accepted and what is not accepted. But to outrightly say no, then I don't think I have that capability to make such a statement in the industry.
And that brings us to the question that I have for you.
Mm-hmm.
Your research, I've called for more research in this area, empirical research in this area, that people need to look more into it in terms of how to ensure that it's not just all promise. It's not all just trying to say that I'm going to use AI.
Mm.
Are you actually using it? On how are you actually using it?
Good.
So what would you recommend?
See, during the research, I discovered the same thing you're talking about, where everybody thinks AI will make us better, but people are actually not doing it. Okay. For us to move from just talking to implementing, I think it's time for the people or the professionals, the stakeholders at the top, professors like myself. There's need for us to keep having conversations. This podcast is one of them. I'm hopeful and certain that this will go to the academic industry and people would listen. Okay. Sometimes you don't even have to agree with me. You have a different perspective. That's equally okay.
Exactly.
And we debate it back and forth and come to a conclusion.
True.
You see? So these are the kinds of conversations.
We need to keep the conversation.
Yes. Going. But when we are not talking about it at all, then we're not going anywhere. Okay. So there's need for conversations and engagement in the industry. That's number one. There's need for policies to be in place to guide the use of AI in academic research, okay? There's need for us to understand, the same way you have a variation of activities in research, there are variations of AI out there. Then which one should you use for literature review? How does it actually help you?
So it is important to know when to use what?
AI, exactly. Let me give you an example. A student of mine was saying, I don't trust ChatGPT to help me get some papers for my literature review. You are using the wrong AI. There's an AI called Research Rabbit.
Right.
There's another one called Cite that could actually, it doesn't even give you the paper. Give the AI just one paper. It draws a map. Okay, this paper was actually written. What was written from this paper and what was written from that paper? So at
least... And connect it.
And connect. So you are able to see the map. Oh, from 1980, they said this and this and this. So doing, you will see where the conversation has been going. Now, you want to go against or you want to support? Completely
up to you.
Because now it is clear. That's what AI can do for us. But when you take ChatGPT as, the almighty AI, and use it to fix, that's because you don't understand the body of AI.
Exactly. It's always what I preach, that it's very important. It's like your example earlier about, you know, cooking.
Mm-hmm.
And it's important to know what ingredient needs to go in at what time.
Exactly.
And what you need to use at what time. So it is very, very fantastic. And thank you very much for this really, really insightful discussion. And we really appreciate it that you're here with us. I'm really, really honored to have you on this podcast.
Thank you.
And Our last question is, and this is what we help normally do for every podcast, is if you could leave one question for the next guest, what would that be?
We need to involve the students in the conversations that surrounds the implementation of AI. We're not going to play God and just think we'll make decisions that governs their own future. We must understand that we might not be part of that future.
Absolutely.
Now, the question to the next guest, do you think that students should be allowed into these conversations? Okay? Again, let me buttress it. We're talking about having the proper conversation of AI in academia. How far should it go? What should be accepted and what should not be accepted? Well, the conversations are going on with the professors. However, we're making decisions or conclusions for people's future that we might not be part of. Don't we think that the students should be part of the conversations?
I can almost guess the answer of the next guest on this. And then I really, really love that question. Thank you, Dr. Ekundayo. This has been really insightful conversation, and I'm able to learn, and I'm sure the listeners have learned a lot about how AI is being used in research.
Thank you very much, brother.
Dear listeners, please drop us a review and share your thoughts at www.d2dpodcast.com. Your feedback would help us bring even more conversation that matter. Also, don't forget to follow us on all social media platforms at D2Disrupt for regular updates and latest updates. Until next time, stay curious, stay disruptive.